Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's Monday, January 2nd, 2023. Happy New Year!
Yay.
Live to be broadcast on Wednesday, January 4th on 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let me know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Happy New Year! I hope 2023 is a happy, productive, prosperous, and restful year for you. So, we had an absolutely fabulous New Year's celebration.
We did?
Yeah. So,
when?
Right, it was on New Year's Eve, and so I did a ride with the herd last night. It was a lovely women's ride with the herd on Zwift, and we were chatting about what we did for New Year's, and so the leader of the ride would ask some questions. And because we're the herd, the custom to greet each other or show affirmation of something by saying moo. So she was asking questions and she asked if you liked something, you would say moo. And if you didn't like it, you'd say boo. So we mooed and booed a bunch of things that she asked about. One of them was, do you like going out on New Year's Eve and partying? Or do you prefer to stay home in bed and watch the ball drop from the comfort of your home on the TV? And the vast majority of people wrote, and it was moo if you like to go party and boo if you like to stay home. Well, the vast majority of people who are on the ride said boo. What she said is that we're athletes. You know, people who are athletic don't necessarily like to stay out at night because they usually do workouts early in the morning and they get tired in the evening. So
and first day stuff.
And that's right. That's the other piece, that there's often first day things happening because people who are athletic often want to start because you're usually not working on New Year's Day, unless you are. But people who are not working on New Year's Day usually want to go out and get that first workout of the year to set the mood of the year right. I was intending to get out on the road because it was warm enough to get out on the road, and a lot of people did yesterday. I didn't because I was at home with my puppy grandniece having my last few hours with her because she got picked up yesterday. And so I wanted to spend time with little Ube, the little cute Ube. So I stayed with her and we waited for my sister-in-law, Susan, and my niece-in-law, Erica, to come over and get Ube. And by the time I was ready to get on the bike, it was 4 o'clock. And so I wasn't going to go out. The sun was going to set on me. So I got on Zwift and it was lovely and I had great chats with, it was a women's ride and I had great chats and it was really fun. And Ron went on a first day hike. I was feeling a little under the weather earlier in the day. So I didn't go. I felt like, again, staying home with Ube. And Ron went on the first day hike, which they had over at Mansfield Hollow, and he had a great time. And so a lot of times there are these first day hikes. People will go out and do something mildly epic for the first day. If you do anything for the first day of the year, I think it's a good thing. So if you got out and went for a little walk around the neighborhood, I think that's awesome. I noticed that my friend who lives in Evesham, New Jersey, my friend Betsy, she lives in Evesham, New Jersey. I met her on Zwift and I saw that she was from Evesham. And I'm like, is she from Evesham in England? Or is she from Evesham two towns over from Nancy down in South Jersey? And I looked her up, and she's from Evesham two towns over from Nancy in South Jersey. Well, yesterday she went on a walk with her friend in the park by the river that's 2 blocks from my sister's house. So there you go. So people did mini things like that. Very nice, like mellow, chill things for the first of the year. And it is the first of the year. A lot of people have off today. I don't know if you do. There's no post office today. We're doing this. I will go into the office and do charts and prep for tomorrow, which is my last work day before we head off to Florida to see my mom, which should be lots of fun. Maybe we'll do a quick Facebook Live down there just to say hello.
We could do that.
Yeah, just a quick Facebook Live. All right. So let's, so I wanted to talk about that. We're getting into that dark time of year. January is kind of a cold, dark month, although the beginning of January is not so cold. That I don't know if we're going to see, we'll see freezing weather, but like the highs for the next week are in the 40s and 50s. It's weird. So, and then of course we're going to go to Florida. It's going to be in the 60s and 70s, or maybe the 70s and 80s. I don't know. So anyway, so I wanted to talk about how to get better sleep. I always like to review getting better sleep. And I want to make sure that you do that and make sure you get extra rest. If you don't feel like doing a lot this time of year, it's okay to rest. It's okay to come down. It's okay to regenerate and review what you're doing for the year and decide if you're going to make some resolutions for the year. Just become introspective. It's dark out. It's going to be dark for a while. We are going to start gaining light. Let me see. Today, it's January 1st, so we should be bottoming out or topping out. The sunrise zenith is coming up, and I think we may be in the sunrise zenith, and we're going to start gaining minutes in the morning in a few days. I'm not sure the actual date, but right now the sun in Mansfield Center is rising at 7:16 a.m. and it's going to stay at 7:16 a.m. It's not going to get any earlier. Yay. Mm-hmm. And so it sits at 7:16 and then it's going to start rising at 7:15, and that's going to happen in the next few days. And so right now we are gaining minutes very fast, faster at the end of the day. So the days are getting longer. I mean, we are now 2 weeks past the solstice. So the days are getting longer, but they're getting longer at the end of the day, not at the beginning of the day. But they will start doing that in a few days. So hip, hip, hooray. All right. So let's talk about how to get better sleep. All right. So there's a lot of tips to help you sleep better at night. I have a little outline here, and I want to give you the 7 tips. If you get more bright light exposure during the day, you will sleep better at night. It's confusing if your body is not in natural light during the day. So what you need is natural sunlight. And even if it's not sunny out, it's still good to get outside because you still get natural sunlight. It is filtered through the clouds, but you are getting that natural sunlight. And that natural light helps to keep your circadian rhythm healthy. That's the rhythm that your body follows in terms of your sleep-wake cycle. So getting outside, even if you just go stand in your yard for 5 or 10 minutes, you don't even have to move. Just get that natural light on your eyes. If you have a sunny spot in your house that has a nice window, if you have a sunroom, go sit in that sunny spot. If you can find that sunny spot, that's a really great place to sit, and you'll get it that way. The window doesn't prevent you from getting that nice sunshine. I know when I'm at work, I have an unfortunate situation in that we have something in medicine called HIPAA, which is a Health Privacy Act. And so I have 3 lovely windows in my office, and I have two of the windows are south facing. It gets very warm in my room, even in the winter. So with these south facing windows, light comes in, and I have to keep the blinds drawn for privacy. So anyway, so what I do is when I'm on virtual, my iPad doesn't face the window, so there's no issue with anybody seeing the person who's on my screen. When I'm on virtual, I will open the shades and let some light come in. And also at the end of the day, regardless of whether it's dark or light out, I will open the shades as well. And I have one of my staff, Carrie. It's very interesting. She insists upon leaving when I walk in the room in the morning, no matter what's going on, she makes sure that the shade above the HEPA filter is half open. So I walk into a bright room. And then at some point before I see the patients, I have to draw it. But still, I noticed that she was doing that, and I'm like, that's interesting. I mean, I need it down. But then I was like, you know, this is a good thing because I'm walking into a bright room. The first thing I walk into is light. That's really good because the light shines on me as I'm walking in the door. So getting into that natural light, whether you're looking through a window, whether you're actually outside, is going to help you sleep better. helps you with insomnia. It's been studied in older adults that 2 hours of bright sunlight exposure during the day increase the amount of sleep by 2 hours and sleep efficiency by 80%. So it's really important. It's not just, you know, stay inside and hide. If you get outside, you're actually going to sleep better. And you can also get full spectrum light. Of course, you can get light bulbs that have full spectrum light, and they're going to help to cheer you up in this time of year. Also, reduce blue light exposure in the evening. Where do you get the blue light? Where did the blue light come from?
The blue light.
Yeah, you get too much blue light in the evening. Where's it coming from?
Not sure.
I'll give you a hint.
The computer screen.
Any screen. Screens.
Yeah, screens.
Yes. So reduce your screen exposure in the evening. I noticed that if I've had a taxing day, one of the things with, I have, you know, a sensitive autonomic nervous system. And if I, even sometimes if I'm watching TV at night, my eyes will start to tremble because, with just my, part of my autonomic thing. It's because I've had too much screen exposure. And then when I get the screens off and I'm no longer looking at any kind of light, my nervous system relaxes and goes down. That's why it's good for me to do the yin yoga. When I do the yin yoga, I have the TV going, but I dim the light in my room, and I'll even light a candle. This time of year, I like to light a candle. I don't like to light candles so much in the summer because they're warming. But this time of year, when it's chilly and dry in the house, it's nice to light a candle. It's the next best thing to having a fireplace, especially if you light a few candles. And I noticed that at Hanukkah, because when I would light the menorah and I would carry it to another spot, I noticed how warm it was, how much warmth it was giving off. The light from candles is not insignificant, and the warmth from candles is not insignificant. And then if it smells with some kind of a natural essential oil, it's very lovely. I have this like pear spice one that a nice lady from the farmer's market made. And I haven't seen her at the farmer's market since I bought that candle. And if I see her again, I'm going to buy another candle from her because I really like the candle she sold me. I'm getting a lot of pleasure out of it. And, you know, having a candle with essential oils in it that you like lavender, that's a really nice one. That lavender, can't go wrong with lavender, unless you hate lavender for some reason. But you can't go wrong with lavender. If you like it, it's calming, it's refreshing, it's open, it's not heavy. It's not like having the smell of, I mean, as much as bone broth is wonderful, it's not a wonderful smell to have in your house. It's just heavy and dark. Whereas, you know, lavender and mint are bright. Lavender is a mint, after all. Anyway, so getting back to the blue light. Blue light exposure in the evening is an issue. Think about, you know, in the evening, relaxing. If you need to look at screens, consider wearing blue light blocking glasses. And I don't need glasses to watch TV because it's for distance, but I could consider wearing, you know, no prescription blue light glasses to watch. That's a thought. I should get some no prescription blue light glasses to watch TV at night.
Okay.
Yeah, that might calm my eyes a little bit. Mm. And so smartphones, computers emit them in large amounts. I'm wearing, as you can see, I'm wearing glasses right now. The glasses I'm wearing are reading glasses, so they're not prescription glasses, but they do have blue blocking glasses. I don't buy glasses anymore without blue light blocking, and I'll find that if I'm looking at the screen, it really is relaxing to my eyes, that it makes it, like if I take off these glasses versus have them on, it's a big difference. Do you know there's an app called F.Lux that blocks blue light on your laptop or computer? You can download that, and it'll block blue light all the time. I've also turned my computer at work, I've turned the screen light down, and I've also after a certain time of night, that blue light app goes off, and my screen looks a little bit pinkish. It's very interesting. And it's a good idea to stop TV and bright light 2 hours before heading to bed. A lot of people don't do that. They usually watch TV or on their screens right up until bed. If you sleep okay and you're doing that, that's okay. But you'll do better if you don't do that. And if you want to keep doing something, you could write in a journal or you could read a book on paper. I find reading a book on paper very relaxing. And that helps me sleep. And the thing, whereas TV sucks me in, I want to just keep watching TV until I fall asleep. Whereas if I'm reading a book, after a while, I'm like, all right, I can't do this anymore. And I'll close the book and put it down because I'm just getting tired. It's that relaxing. Here's an obvious one. Don't consume caffeine late in the day. My thought is if you're having trouble sleeping, consuming any caffeine at all is silly. And yet people do it. People are very attached to it. People don't think of it as a drug. They think of it as their routine. And, you know, it's a problem because it really does. It really can affect your sleep. And think about it. If you're really having trouble sleeping, if you could go without the caffeine. But I like that hot beverage. Okay, well, find a hot beverage that mimics the caffeine that you like. So say you like a chai tea, you can get chai rooibos, for example. Or if you enjoy drinking coffee, you can have decaffeinated coffee. If you can also find herbal variants on coffee so that you can get coffee that has chicory in it or it has herbs to make it seem like it's coffee. You know, that usually it has chicory and some other things as well. All right. And so you have to realize that depending on your metabolism, caffeine can stay elevated in your blood for 6 to 8 hours. So if you're drinking coffee after 3 to 4 p.m., it's not a good idea. And if you don't metabolize it well, even earlier than that. So keep the caffeine down. Reduce irregular or long daytime naps. Short power naps can be helpful, but if you sleep too long in the daytime, it'll affect your sleep at night. That seems obvious. And now some people can take a long nap and then also sleep. But if you're in the habit of taking a long nap and your sleep quality is affected by that, it's actually, if you take longer naps than about 30 minutes, it can actually harm your health and your sleep quality. And so it really depends on the person. Some people are like, but I take my hour nap and I'm fine. If you're fine, it's okay. Napping is not in and of itself a harmful thing. It's just that if you're trying to get a full night's sleep, it might interfere with that. So you have to figure out how long of a nap can you get and then sleep through the night if that's your goal. All right. So just realize that if you're like, oh, I'm so tired in the middle of the day and taking a 2-hour nap and then you can't get a full night's sleep and you're waking up, then shorten the nap.
So, I don't have that problem.
Yeah. So you can nap long and then still sleep.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like I said, if you nap long and then you are still able to get a good night's sleep, then you probably need the nap. And you probably need the nap just because you're very active. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a high metabolism and you're very physically active. You get up, you know, the crack of dawn, three days a week. It's going to be more days a week when we get back from Florida, right? To get up early and teach your spin classes. And you work hard and then you do other things during the day. So at some point in the day, you need to take a nap. And we also kind of stay up late. So
right.
We stay up late,
that's
and then you have to get up early. So you're catching up.
Right.
You're catching up on the sleep. Yeah. So anyway. So the other thing is try to sleep and wake at consistent times. If you want to have a circadian rhythm, you kind of need to set it. So you have to figure out what works for you. And there are three basic circadian types. The first circadian type, the most common circadian type is the one that I am. And that's where I tend to like to wake up in the morning somewhere between 7 and 9 at this point. But, and if I would go to sleep early, it would probably be between 7 and 8. And then I like to go to sleep around, honestly, somewhere between 10 and 11 plus. By midnight, I'm really pretty crashed out. And that depends on the day. If I've had a big day, I will fall asleep earlier than that. I'll fall asleep in the 9 or 10 o'clock hour. But I don't want to know about 5 in the morning. 5 in the morning is a time to be looking at the inside of my eyelids. It's time in the morning to turn over and realize that Ron's up already, getting ready for spin class, and me to go to the bathroom, get a glass of water, and go back to sleep. That's what I do at 5 in the morning. Unless, you know, I have to catch a plane or something. But I haven't had to get up that early pretty much the whole year. So I'm keeping a pretty constant sleep cycle. Now, if you can do that, that's great. And people who work shift work have a very difficult time with that. I have patients who, the most heartbreaking thing, it's heartbreaking to have somebody who works third shift, unless they love it. If you love it and it works for you, that's great. And if you're one of those people that your circadian type is you're the night owl, where you sleep in until 12, 1 o'clock and you're up until 4 in the morning, and you do shift work, and that works for you, you know, you work third shift and you feel fantastic. Again, if something is working for you and you're happy and healthy, it's fine. But for most people statistically are not that circadian type. I have patients who will work, for example, they'll work long shifts, 12-hour shifts, and they'll work, for example, four 12-hour shifts, 4 days in a row, have 3 days off, and then have, so they'll have four 12-hour shifts, 4 days in a row during the day, that they'll have to be in at seven and out at seven, right? And then they have 3 days off, and then they have to go back four 12-hour shifts in a row, and it's 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. So they're flipping back and forth. That is not good for your health because you're flipping your circadian cycle all the time. There's ways to get away with it. You know, I mean, it's better for you when you're on that day cycle, but when you're on that night cycle, you have to make up for the sleep during the day and get a lot of extra rest. But that affects your health, your weight, your mood, your blood sugar. There's so many things that it affects. If you cannot work shift work, that's better. Or if you have to work shift work, it's better to stay on the same shift so your body gets used to it. But it's difficult. It's very hard on people's bodies to do that. And yet there are some jobs that require that. You know, people need to be at the hospital. People need to be at the power plant. People need to be driving Ubers. You know, there's certain things that need to be done in the middle of the night because people need them. So we're blessed to be able to have people who can do that, but you can consider doing it for a while and then not doing it anymore because it's not great for your health. But if you find the circadian rhythm that works for you, so if you're more of a, you know, 7 or 8 a.m. to 10, 11 p.m. kind of person, if you can stay in that realm, that's good. Then the second most common person is the early bird. So early birds, they want to wake up 5-6 in the morning and then they go to bed at 8 or 9 o'clock at night and sleep a full night. And they're chipper first thing in the morning. They feel really good first thing in the morning. Mm. And a lot of athletes are like that. That your people who come into you for the 5:45 class, they're mostly like that, right?
Yeah. And you get more done if you do that in the day.
You do.
I think. But well, that's me. You know, I also can't read after a certain hour of the day and I just get sleepy.
Yeah.
But in the morning I can read.
You're not, but that's not your circadian clock. Your circadian clock, you're more of a seven to, you're the same as me. You force yourself to get up at that time of day.
Only because I go to bed so late.
Right. Because yeah. I don't know.
because of you.
Well, I know, but the 4 days a week, you're not doing that and you still do that cycle. Would you get up at 5 in the morning if, you know, would you get up at 5 in the morning if you didn't have to teach that class?
Probably not, because you get home so late.
No, say it didn't exist. Would you get up at 5 in the morning if, say there was no Fran, would you get up at 5 in the morning? Is that your preferred time to get up?
I used to before I met you.
All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. So maybe you are really an early bird.
I'm just more productive that time of day in general.
Are you getting up at 5 in the morning and being productive? Or are you getting up at 5 in the morning and sitting on the couch, looking at your tablet, drinking your coffee,
reading the Hartford Current, reading the New York Times?
I'm not convinced that that's your time.
That's what I do. I read.
Yeah. I'm not convinced that that's your time of day. I'm wondering if you're actually the later shift and you're making yourself get up because you have this class at that time of day. I'm not sure. So, but in any case, whatever you do, do it consistently and then you'll sleep better. And also you should drink water. I'm going to right now. Thirsty. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
Cheers.
You can take a supplement of melatonin. So you only take melatonin if you're deficient in melatonin. If you take melatonin and you don't feel good when you take the melatonin or you get weird dreams, you don't need the melatonin. They can help you sleep. If you take melatonin and you sleep better and you wake up and you feel rested and you don't get weird dreams, then take the melatonin. And melatonin can be useful in as little as half a milligram and as much as 20 milligrams and anything in between. So what I say to people taking melatonin is to take the lowest effective dose. You should always take the lowest effective dose of anything. If you don't need more of it, you shouldn't take more of it. This is not a more is better situation. So, you know, then they give melatonin to little kids when they're hyperactive, which may not necessarily be the greatest thing. It all depends on what's going on with the kid. Of course, you know, sometimes it's necessary. And there was a study where they just used 2 milligrams of melatonin and it helped people fall asleep faster. I wouldn't take it myself because I'm pretty good at sleeping. I mean, on the nights that, and if I have a bad night, you know, where I don't sleep as well, I usually make up for it the next night. So melatonin is good when you change time zones or if you have daylight savings time, going from daylight savings time to standard time or the other direction. But melatonin is definitely good when you change time zones or when you're traveling. So, there are some countries where you have to get a prescription for it, but in the United States, it's available in stores and, you know, you can get it from your friendly local naturopath. You can get it lots of places. You can also get it online, of course. There are other supplements that can be helpful. I'm a big fan of glycine. Glycine is a great amino acid that's calming. It helps to build collagen. It's one of the amino acids that's in collagen. And if you take 3 grams of it, it can help. There's a study where it did help improve sleep quality. Glycine is one of those things that if you don't need it, don't take it. I notice that if I take too much glycine, I'll fall asleep too fast. It really, really knocks me out, which means I probably don't need a lot of it. And we eat soup with bone broth in it. And I'm taking bone broth protein, so I'm getting some glycine there. So I go on and off glycine because sometimes I'm like, yeah, it's going to be helpful to me. And then sometimes I feel like it just knocks me out too much and it gives me weird dreams. And if a supplement is giving you weird dreams, it probably means that you are taking too much of it. And so if you want to take that supplement, back off on the dose.
Or maybe too late in the day before you're going to bed.
There's that. And that's the other thing. I am taking a supplement that has some glycine in it. And I take that with my protein shake earlier in the day. So I'm getting glycine in a few places. I'm getting, it's in the bone broth protein. It's in the, I have a cocoa supplement that has some, it has branched chain amino acids in it. And it also has some glycine right in it. And so I'm getting that earlier in the day. So I'm probably over, when, if I take glycine at night, it's too much. So I'm getting enough glycine. Glycine is an interesting amino acid because when we, in our culture, we don't eat nose to tail. We tend to eat just certain cuts of the animal protein. And so when you would get glycine, if you're eating nose to tail, what that means is you're eating the organs and you're eating the bones and the tendons and stuff. So we eat soups with bone broth base. So that soup you made last night had bone broth base, right?
Right. Absolutely.
What are we going to do for my mother? She should really have bone broth. You know what?
We can buy it at the store.
Let's do that. I think we'll make my mother a soup that has bone broth in it, and she'll be like, whoa, this is good.
She won't know the difference.
You could, yeah. You do know the difference, though. You think that if you have a soup that has bone broth as a base, so say last night, what was it? It was a coconut curry.
I made a Thai coconut curry.
Chicken soup, and it had bone broth as a base. Yep. It tastes like coconut curry Thai chicken soup. It doesn't taste like, ooh, this has a heavy, greasy, keratin taste. It doesn't taste like that. It tastes like whatever you put in the soup. So it really works as a base, and it makes the soup creamier. It gives it great mouthfeel. It's really wonderful. And you can use bone broth as a base for a sweeter soup, like butternut squash soup. It's wonderful. So you don't have to have bone broth plain. You can have bone broth, you know, as a base for soup, whatever soup you're making that calls for broth. And the soup comes out fantastic and it's really good for you. So anyway, so if you may not want to take glycine as a supplement if you're already getting bone broth. But if you're already at the point where you're having bone broth, you may be sleeping well anyways. And so I don't know. But glycine can be really helpful. Getting glycine in as part of your health plan, whether you're getting it from a supplement or whether you're getting it in bone broth, it's good for you. So it helps to rebuild. It helps helps to calm you down. It helps with pain. It's a really tremendous supplement. Ginkgo can help with sleep. It can help with relaxation and stress reduction, and it helps helps with brain function. Then there's valerian. Valerian, I don't recommend all the time. Some people do really well with valerian. Some people get groggy with valerian, which means it's too much for you. And some people have a paradoxical reaction to valerian where it makes them hyper. So valerian, some people take valerian and it works very well. It is pretty bitter and it doesn't smell great. So some people prefer to take it in pills rather than in tea or as part of a tincture. But, you know, there's some people I give tinctures with valerian as part of the tincture, and it works very nicely. Magnesium. A lot of people don't get enough magnesium. Why don't they get the magnesium? Because they're not eating well. There's a couple things. You're not eating enough magnesium. And the other thing is that you're eating too much starch and sugar, which is going to deplete you of magnesium. And then if you're eating too much starch and sugar and you're very stressed or you're very physically active or both, then you're going to be deficient in magnesium. So most people can use an extra dose of magnesium. We eat a lot of vegetables and a lot of produce and a lot of, a lot of whole food. So we're getting some magnesium that way. But I also take a magnesium supplement, but I don't take a huge amount. I take less than 300 milligrams in a day. And it's responsible for over 600 reactions in your body. It's super important. And if you don't have enough magnesium in your body, you will probably not sleep well. You will probably also be getting foot and leg and other place cramps and little fasciculations places. Do you ever notice you get little twitchy things in your muscles?
All the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, you have impact from the meds that you're taking, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But you're taking magnesium every day, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah, I know.
And all sorts of other stuff. Also, your branched chain amino acids.
Right.
That kind of stuff.
We put Ron on branched chain amino acids. Cause,
yeah. Because I have to take earlier in the day than later in the day, or else I don't.
You get weird dreams.
Weird dreams.
Yeah. That's the interesting thing about amino acids. Amino acids are precursors to neurotransmitters, and they increase neurotransmitter function in your brain. So if you're taking various amino acids, you may have to take them earlier in the day, or you will get weird dreams. You know how people talk about tryptophan makes you sleepy? So turkey has a lot of tryptophan in it, so It can make you sleepy. And if you take a lot of tryptophan, it can give you weird dreams. So that turkey thing is controversial. I have one of my favorite things to have for lunch is a turkey sandwich. And I don't find that it makes me sleepy. So there's some thought to that. But anyway, when you take supplements, you're taking concentrated amino acids, and those amino acids are precursors to neurotransmitters. So if you take them too close to bedtime, you might have some interesting dreams. And then on top of it, if you watch, you know, if you're binge watching Stranger Things, that makes it worse. Yeah, we're late to the party. We started watching Stranger Things, I think, last week.
Mm.
And now we really want to know what happens to 11. Don't tell us. we want to know if Will comes back. We're not very far into it, so we haven't seen Will come back. But I think Will does come back.
Whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I have to rewatch season
Spoiler
one.
Spoiler alert if anyone else hasn't seen it.
Yeah, most people have seen it. Or they haven't seen it at all and they don't care. That's what you got going on here. But you know, I don't know if my mother has watched it, so I don't know if we're going to get to keep watching it. We can if we want to. We can go in another room and watch it if she doesn't want to watch it. And all this from taking amino acids too late. Speaking of amino acids, I think you can take L-theanine late, because I do, and it works for me. L-theanine is very nice. I don't know if I've ever seen it upset somebody, like have a negative effect on somebody. And having said that, anything I'm talking to you about can have a negative effect on you, because I have always, this is something I've taught my staff to expect. Anything can do anything to anybody. So if you have a doctor that says that drug can't do that to you, and you know that something happened to you after you took that drug, I don't agree. Anything can do anything to anyone. Because why? Biochemical individuality. If everybody has biochemical individuality, we're all metabolizing at different rates. We all have different genetics. On any given day, you have different metabolism. You have different microbiota based on what you ate. All kinds of different things going on. So anything can be, anything can do anything. L-theanine works very well for me. L-theanine also, I've seen it be gentle and work very nicely for a lot of people. That it's a little bit gentler, I think, than, say, GABA. And GABA is not on this list, so I'll talk about that next. So L-theanine is extract of tea, in the tea plant, as in Camellia sinensis, not herbal tea, even though it is an herb. But Camellia sinensis is the plant that black tea, green tea, white tea, oolong tea come from. And the more it's fermented, the more theanine is in it. So the more caffeine the thing has in it, the more theanine is in it, which is kind of a good thing, I suppose. But you can take pills, which I do. I take theanine every day. I have a chill Fran out routine in the evening that includes L-theanine and taurine and a cup of Tulsi tea. And sometimes the Tulsi is ashwagandha. Sometimes it has other calming herbs in it. So L-theanine can be really helpful. Lavender, and you can use lavender various ways. You can drink lavender as tea. You can also just smell it. You can light candles. You can spray your pillow with a spray with lavender essential oil in it. You can use lavender in soaps and body washes. It's very calming. It's very lovely. Not everybody reacts well to it. Most people do. I use hand sanitizer, of course, in my office because I don't have a physical sink in the office where I see patients. The sink is in the bathroom and in the waiting room. So to clean my hands before and after I touch the patients, I'm using hand sanitizer. And I use lavender hand sanitizer. And most of my patients walk in and they say, "Oh, it smells so good in here." And they don't say, "Hey, it smells nice in here." They say, "Oh, it smells so good," which means it's doing something to their brain. That's making them feel really good. Once in a while, you get somebody who's like, "I'm allergic to lavender. I don't like lavender." So I have unscented hand sanitizer for them. Most of the time, it doesn't seem to bother. Like, I don't always ask. I just use the lavender hand sanitizer and they don't say anything. I think it's something that's a subtle thing that I use in my practice that's helpful. I get these big jugs of a really good organic brand and lasts a long time and it's really good. So lavender has linalool in it. So it's really nice. So like I said, you can drink lavender tea. You can get chamomile lavender tea at the health food store. I've seen that as a mixture. It's fine. It's a mint. It's fine to ingest. And then there's GABA. So GABA is something that the Ramones used to say, "Gabba gabba hey."
Yeah.
Was that a song? Or?
I don't know.
Anyway, that's from the era of the Ramones, but that had two B's in it. This only has one. GABA stands for gamma aminobutyric acid, and it's a calming neurotransmitter. You can take it as a supplement, and you can take it in its plain form, GABA. And GABA by itself won't necessarily get into your brain, but it'll relax the rest of your body, so you'll feel relaxed. You can also take PharmaGABA, which does get into your brain. So that's been enhanced so it gets into your brain. And that I found that to be a very useful supplement too. If people are extremely anxious and on the verge of getting a pharmaceutical, I'll often use GABA or PharmaGABA. I like to try theanine first, but people who are just, you know, they just really need a lot of help, I'll start with GABA if you're very, very anxious. So because I feel like GABA is not subtle. It's a neurotransmitter that is made by your body. And if you're overproducing cortisol and you're overdoing your dopamine and your acetylcholine, then your GABA is going to be a little bit offline. So we give you extra GABA just to calm everything down. So alcohol. People think, "Oh, alcohol is going to make me relax." And it does make you relax. It makes you relax while you're drinking it. But the thing is that alcohol sets off your metabolism, and it takes up a lot of B vitamins to digest it. So, and you need B vitamins to manage your nerves and your neurotransmitters. And so if you drink extra alcohol, you're going to deplete yourself of those things. So alcohol, it's a central nervous system depressant in the short term. But in the long term, if you're drinking alcohol every night, it's going to affect your sleep. In the long term, and I think the mechanism is that takes up the resources of your liver, so your liver isn't as available to metabolize your neurotransmitters or your amino acids, and also your B vitamins, and then it does suck up B vitamins, which you need to manage your neurotransmitters. So over time, it's going to make it so you don't sleep as well. It also can enhance sleep apnea and snoring, and it also messes up your melatonin production. So again, melatonin is related to serotonin, and they require B vitamins, and the B vitamins are needed for alcohol metabolism. So it also decreases your natural nighttime elevations in human growth hormone, which helps you to repair and regenerate your body. So you're going to have less muscle regeneration if you drink a lot of alcohol. And so if you're an athlete and you drink too much alcohol, you're not going to get your benefits as easily. And then and human growth hormone plays a role in your circadian cycle, so it's going to mess up your circadian cycle. Your bedroom. Make sure your bedroom is calm, quiet. It's not excessively cluttered. It doesn't have excessive noise. I remember when I lived in Portland, the last apartment that I had was on a main road. It wasn't Burnside Avenue, but it was a main road. It was Southeast 17th. And it was a way to get from here to there. It was a way to get through Westmoreland, Eastmoreland, down to Selwood. Because there are certain north to south routes that are the numbered streets in Portland, and of course east to west ones that are main conduits, and Southeast and 17th Street was one of them. Stark Street was one of the east to west. Burnside was one of the east to west. Division, Powell, you know all those roads? Yeah, those are all the main drags in Portland. So anyway, I was on Southeast 17th, and it was noisy, and I remember my cousin Sarah came to stay with me one night, and I can't remember why she had to come stay with me. Maybe she had early work or something. And we set her up to sleep in the living room, and it didn't work. She couldn't sleep because it was just too noisy. The road noise was bad. So if you live near a noisy road, you may have to do white noise to drown that out. We're very fortunate. It's very quiet where we live. We live in Mansfield Hollow. Bassett's Bridge Road at that time of night is not extremely busy. And I don't notice the road noise even when it's busy here, you know, because people do use it as a through road, which is kind of annoying. But I don't really notice it. So it's great to have a quiet bedroom. So you want your bedroom to be the right temperature for you. You want it to be adequately cool. There are studies that show that you need to have your bedroom between 50 and 60 degrees to sleep optimally. Now, this one, he doesn't appreciate that because he doesn't have a lot of body fat. And I need it pretty cool to be able to sleep comfortably. And I'll wake up sweating if it's in the 70s in my bedroom, I will wake up sweating. That's why we have an overhead fan and we have to use air conditioner in the summer. When you're a postmenopausal woman, you tend to be hotter, unfortunately. And unless your guy is a big guy, you're going to run into, you're going to be hotter than your guy. And that's not unusual anyway, that you have a couple, regardless of their genders, they have different preferences in terms of temperature. And there are beds that you can get that will adjust your temperature. Those are, you know, cool, you know, high-tech expensive beds, and we don't have one like that. But that is an option, that there are smart beds now. You know there are smart beds?
Yeah.
And they will adjust to your body temperature. Yeah. Yeah, so
they'll adjust your bank account too.
Yeah, they will. It's true. But I don't know what we'll do about it. But if we get rich, we might invest in a smart bed.
I like my bed.
Yes. At some point we're gonna have to get a new mattress.
You keep saying that.
I know.
And we keep not needing it.
All right. You don't wanna have extra light. You don't wanna have noise, no blue light going. Some people sleep with the TV on. I don't know how they do that.
Your sister.
Yeah, I know. But you know, I think, you know, that she needs somebody talking to her to feel less anxious, I guess. But I like it dark and quiet in my bedroom. Mm. I do get nervous when I'm the only one in the house. But I still want it. I still need it dark and quiet in order to be able to sleep. So you don't want noise, light, artificial light from devices like alarm clocks. We do have an alarm clock in our bedroom, but it gives off red light, so it's not too bad. The temperature, as I said, there's a study that reveals that body and bedroom temperature can decrease sleep quality, and increased body and bedroom temperature can decrease sleep quality and increase wakefulness. 70 degrees seems to be comfortable for most people, although it depends on your preferences and habits. I would say I like it a little cooler than 70. But if it's much above 70, it's going to be hard to sleep. You don't want to eat too late. If you eat too late, then you're sitting there digesting, and that can affect your human growth hormone and your melatonin. Although, if you have a late night snack, that can actually be helpful. If you eat a high carb meal 4 hours before bed, that can help you fall asleep faster. But a low carb diet also helps you with sleep. Relax and clear your mind in the evening. So like I said, I have this come down process that I do in the evening where I have some supplements that I take. I have my cup of Tulsi tea, and I take my L-theanine, and I don't take magnesium at night because if I do, I'll have too much magnesium. And so, and then I'll do some relaxing yoga, some usually yin yoga. So yoga that helps you to come down. And that includes a lot of deep breathing and stretching, and usually ends with Shavasana, which is where I'm lying and just breathing. And that really helps me at night, especially if I've had a long, busy day. So if I've had a work day, that yin yoga is critical. So you can take a relaxing bath or shower. When we were studying hydrotherapy when I was in school, we talked about the tepid bath. So a tepid bath is a bath that is neither hot nor cold. You get in the bath and it feels like nothing. And so in the tepid bath, it's just very relaxing because your body's not struggling to adjust to cold or adjust to heat. Or sweating or anything like that. You're just in a relaxing bath. Throw a little lavender in it. Throw a little chamomile in it. That's nice too. Taking a hot bath. And then there's studies that show a hot bath 90 minutes before bed improves your sleep quality. Even just taking a hot foot bath can help your sleep quality. We used to talk about all kinds of wonderful hydrotherapies. You can put your feet in Epsom salts and lavender. And so if you don't want to take a full bath, just do the hot foot bath. When you take a hot foot bath, make sure the rest of you is covered up and warm. And if you feel extra warm, it's a good idea to put cold on your head. So you have a little basin with a couple of washcloths and ice in it. And then you, take the washcloths out one at a time, let it sit on your head, and then when it warms up, you switch it out for the other one. You always want your head to be cool or else you'll get lightheaded. Make sure you don't have a sleep disorder. If you just can't sleep and you've tried all kinds of things to help you sleep, go see the doctor. Go get a polysomnogram, which is a sleep EEG where they attach electrodes to your brain and they figure out if you're not sleeping well. And they also observe you to make sure that you're not, that you don't have sleep apnea, that you're not stopping breathing during your sleep. And so make sure you don't have that. Because if you do, if you have sleep apnea, you're not getting past your stage one sleep and you need all four stages. Your deep restorative sleep, your stage three sleep is the sleep that helps to relax your brain and helps you to restore your body. Actually, it helps to restore your body more than your brain. And then the REM sleep, that's your rapid eye movement sleep. That's, you dream in all of your stages of sleep, but you remember your dreams the most in the REM stage. And so if you're losing your REM, that's really bad for your brain. That's going to make you have mental health issues, whether it's anxiety, depression, or worse. And you kind of need at least four cycles of 1, 2, 3 REM through the night. And so what happens through the course of the night is your REM gets longer and longer, which is why you tend to remember your dreams later into the night. But you can have a weird dream in the middle of the night, you know, and it's usually when you finished a REM stage. So you want to get through all your four stages. If you have sleep apnea, you generally wake up in stage one and you never make it to the other stages, which is really bad for your health. So if you have to wear a CPAP or, you know, something with nasal pillows, or there's that new technology called Inspire, which doesn't require masks and stuff, which some people can use and some people, it doesn't work for them. So definitely something to look into. All right. Make sure your bed is comfortable. And your mattress and your pillow. So it says here, some people wonder why they always sleep better in a hotel. It's because, you know, if you're sleeping at a nice hotel, they have a nice bed. The bed might be a higher quality or be in better shape than your bed. So you have to assess whether it's time to get a new mattress. And we did that. When I was having sciatica, I think it was probably in 2011, the last time I had sciatica. That may be when we got that mattress. Mm-hmm. We've discovered that the mattress we had was lumpy. It was not supporting us well. So we got a new mattress, and that really helped. And I also notice, unfortunately, when I sleep at my mom's, there's something off about the mattress she has there, and my back tends to go out. And so I have to work, and then I always feel better when I come home to my own bed. And so if you're going to change your bedding, the thing to do, you could go to that store where they have the thing where they measure you and they suggest the right kind of mattress for you. That's a really good thing. I think that our friend Elliot Tatelman, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a really good thing because they're actually trying to do some metrics to decide what the right bed for you is. And you go into a mattress store where they let you lie on the bed and try it out. Because that's what we did when we went to All Sleep. That's what we did. We went around the whole store and we lay on the beds and we picked out the best mattress for us. Some were too hard and some were too soft. And the one that we got was just right. So you really have to do that. And again, if you want smart technology, if you have a partner who has different preferences than you, softer, harder, different temperatures, you can get a smart bed. Those are out there now. You have to make sure your pillow is comfortable for you, and you have to decide at what angle your head preference is and how soft your pillow needs to be. Some people need softer, some people need harder, and some people need to be at a more acute angle, and some people need to be at a more obtuse angle. And some people like to lie on their backs. So it all depends on what your needs are. So you have to figure that out. Get regular exercise, but not right before bed. Unless the regular exercise is bedtime yoga that's intended for relaxing you. You know, that's really relaxing, slow yoga with a lot of deep breathing. That's okay to do. But if you get exercise, if you go for a run and then expect to go to sleep, that's not so good. Exercise with insomnia is really helpful for helping you to sleep and reduces time to fall asleep by 55% and night wakefulness by 30% and anxiety by 15%. Exercise is really good for you. Daily exercise is good for good night's sleep, but if you do it too late in the day, you may not be able to fall asleep because you're stimulating your cortisol. Basically, your adrenal hormones are being stimulated and you'll have too much of it around, you won't be able to fall asleep. And then drinking liquids before bed. If you drink too much liquid before bed, you may get up to go to the bathroom a lot. Now, if you're a person who prefers to drink and you can get up to go to the bathroom and you fall right back to sleep, then that's fine. If you get up too much, you may want to consider doing your liquids earlier in the day. And this suggests here, don't drink any fluids 1 to 2 hours before going to bed. I can't do that because I just get too dry. And especially this time of year, I wake up in the middle of the night thirsty and I have to drink. Sometimes I don't have to drink a lot, but I mean, I'll finish my glass of water that's on my nightstand and then have to go out and get more. I should probably have a bigger glass on my nightstand.
There you go.
Yeah. So it's really important. There's all kinds of important things to do to get really good sleep. If you don't sleep well, I mean, if you're concerned about fat loss, for example, sleep is really important for that. Doing whatever you need to do to get yourself to sleep in a healthful way is very important. Notice how there's nothing on this list about drugs, that you really want to use pharmaceuticals to help you sleep as a last resort. If you use a drug, for example, like a benzodiazepine, that's your clonazepam or your lorazepam, Ativan and Klonopin, Valium, those are all, they'll knock you out. Alprazolam, Xanax. If you use those drugs, they are accessories to the GABA receptor. They don't directly stimulate it, but they are accessories to it. And so if you use those, they can cause dependence and they knock you out, and then you don't have a way to get out of that. Like if you stop taking it, you're not going to sleep well. So it's really better to figure out what in your life is making it hard for you to sleep. And as we usually say in naturopathic medicine, treat the cause. So treat the cause for better sleep, at whatever that is for you. So it's eating in a way that works for you, making sure you're not eating foods that give you indigestion, making sure you're not eating too close to bed, making sure your bed is comfortable for you, your pillow's comfortable for you, your room temperature's comfortable for you. There's no blue light. You're not doing too much blue light and too much screens right before bed. If you are doing that, please wear blue blocking glasses. Like I said, I think I'm going to get some blue blocking glasses so I can watch TV with them, and that's going to make me more comfortable. All right. So there you go. So all I did was talk about sleep. I was going to talk about seasonal affective disorder too, but I think I'll do that. I think I'll do that next week. Actually, next week, you'll hear an encore presentation because we will be in Florida and we're going to relax. But watch for possible Facebook Lives from Florida, and we'll say hello to you. We'll do a little radio naturopath and a little bicycle talk from the beach. How's that sound?
Okay.
All right. So to sum up, we wanted to talk to you about how to get extra sleep this time of year and how to care for yourself in that way. Happy New Year to all. May 2023 be happy, restful, prosperous, and fulfilling. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Happy New Year!